Hey guys, it's Mark Potter again. Welcome to another episode of Brushstrokes, a podcast powered by Canvas Magazine. Guys, today's episode is brought to you by Sappi, a leading global provider of sustainable wood fiber products and solutions. We all know Sappi is one of the most thoughtful coated producers in all the world. And to learn more about their printer of the year, visit www.sappi.com. Guys, today I am really, really proud to have Trish Witkowski as my guest. Many of you, maybe most of you, know Trish and are familiar with her Fold Factory videos, her Fold Factory company, and everything she has done over this last 20 years for the industry. What you may not know is that Trish is a great metaphor for our industry. She is someone who has taken folding, built a community, and is reinventing herself and is now a highly sought out speaker. And she is also doing a bunch of consulting work as well. So not only do I think that she's a very thoughtful, smart woman, I think that she is strategic in her thinking. And she has an understanding of what it takes to change. I think the biggest thing that resonates with me is her genuine enthusiasm. And I just think that that is something that we can all fall in love with, because someone who has that kind of enthusiasm for folds or paper or printing, for that matter, it's not necessarily the enthusiasm they have for the product or the service. It's the enthusiasm they have for other people and their competency. So you will get a lot out of this conversation. You'll certainly tell how excited she is about our industry and how enthusiastic she is about change in general. So without further ado, take a listen to some of my conversation with Trish Witkowski, the keynote speaker, author, and CEO of Fold Factory. Trish?
Yes. Hi, Mark.
The call was set for 3 a.m., Trish.
Sorry about that. Oh, yeah, my goodness. How did I get that wrong in my calendar?
Early bird gets the worm. I'm so sorry about that. I don't know. If I'm like you or anybody else in this day and age, sometimes we juggle a lot of things. So my apologies for...
Yes. Oh, it's no problem. It's no problem.
How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks. Yeah. How are you doing today?
I'm good. We're...
good.
You know, we've had our share of rain. And
yeah, which is good. We have too.
We're an allergic family, so when the rain comes, that's not a bad thing because it washes a lot of the pollen away. My poor kids, I always said I didn't want them to get my allergies, but unfortunately I think they did. So but it's, you know, we're getting to that point. The closer we creep to June, then everything is blooming and it's all good.
Things get better.
Yeah.
Yep.
How are things in Baltimore?
Rainy, wet, yes. But gosh, it's so lush and beautiful. This time of year is just spectacular here. So
it is. I remember a long time ago, my friend got married there, and it was the first time I flew into Baltimore, and I remember coming down, going, "My Lord, it's all green." You know, it's really nice.
It is.
So it's a pretty part of the. And then, of course, even when you get the snow during the winter times, I mean, it's actually a pretty, really nice looking area. So,
it is,
you know, you grew up there.
It is. No, I did not. I grew up in upstate New York, in a suburb of Rochester called Lima, New York. So it's just a small town. I'm a small town girl. So yeah. I grew up in upstate. So
that's cool. Yeah. Well, you know, I think I told you I grew up in Erie, Pennsylvania. So, small town boy, but that's kind of how you got to. So that's how you got to RIT.
That is. So RIT was about 20 minutes from my house,
Oh,
and
really?
So it was very easy to get to, and so it kind of worked out to have kind of world-class graphic arts and printing education right in my backyard. So
Do you ever get back?
I do. So my parents still live there. So it's nice. I cannot resist driving around, and checking out the campus. And boy, is it a different place than it was when I was there. It's pretty spectacular.
They've got a yeah, because they were there. Well, here I am showing my colors, but they've got a good hockey
They
program. They've got a really good hockey program.
do. They do. They've always had a really good hockey program. I think that they rebuilt their entire, kind of hockey rink and fitness facility and all of that. It's pretty spectacular. And they keep just building new big buildings, and it's a huge campus now. It's they've done tremendously well.
I don't
It's kind of funny. They're always, asking for money, and we're kind of like, "You're doing amazingly well. You don't need our money,
That's right. Yeah.
guys. You don't need us."
Every
But
college, right?
yeah,
Well, it's funny.
yeah.
I don't know if I told you this last time we talked, but I actually, so when I started in the business, I started with SD Warren, which is Sappy. And so
Yeah.
the part of your training was they put me at for a term at RIT. So this is probably back in 90, 91. And so I spent a winter term at Rochester Institute of Technology. It was a lot of fun. I mean, and did you ever get over to a place called the Distillery? Do you know?
Yes.
Oh yeah. So that's where apparently I wasn't spending most of my time in class, but it was yeah, so I was there. So yeah, and I loved it. I really had a great time and
Yeah.
learned a lot and pretty cool place. So
I like Rochester. It'll always be home to me. It's not a super exciting city, not real scenic. It's not, but there's something about it that is warm and inviting, and I just it's always gonna be home for me, so.
Cities like that, Erie, Rochester, they've kind of had some of them have done it up in that Rust Belt area. Some have transformed themselves, others have not.
Yep.
And so being from Pennsylvania, I look at a town like Pittsburgh, right? Pittsburgh was a
Yep.
steel town, and I don't really know how they did it. I don't know how they came about it, but things were going bad, and it was not a great place. And but they've transformed themselves to the point where now they're one of the most livable cities in the country, and booming. And then there are other towns like a Detroit or a Cleveland that have kind of
Yeah,
lagged
that
behind. And
just.
yeah, you know,
Yep.
that's my segue into transformation. I don't know if you were picking up on that, but
Yeah. Yeah, no, I like
But
it.
what do you think the key is? Because I want to get into you, and I want to get into
Yeah.
what you've done, and then of course, but before we do that, what do you think is the key to transformation, being able to transform?
Gosh, I think so much of it is attitude. It's that willingness to realize that we don't know everything, and to be willing to make a change, even if we're not really comfortable making change. It's kind of looking at things with from different angles and different perspectives, and not just looking at everything from a singular perspective. And I think that's a big part of, kind of getting everybody around you to kind of rally as well. You have to kind of create a vision, and you have to make kind of, base hits or baby steps or whatever along the way to prove that things can turn around. If we're talking about cities, I think that's how it's done. And if we're talking about a business, I think it's kind of the same way. I think you have to test the waters and prove that you can have smaller wins before those wins become bigger wins. And it's all about kind of getting people behind your idea and creating some momentum. And sometimes it means, abandoning an idea that you've spent a lot of time on, or something, you know, some part of a business that you really thought was it and that you really worked hard on and you spent a ton of time and money on, and saying, you know, it's not working and it's not paying off and I'm not going to waste another year. You know, we're going to take another direction. And sometimes it's hard to do. Sometimes it's hard to just say, wow, we were kind of wrong on this and we got to, you know, change lanes, you know? Yeah. And sometimes, you know, I see people just beat an idea into the ground, you know, even if it's not working, and sink, you know, endless money into it, even when it's obvious that it's not going to survive. And I think you have to be realistic when, you know, when the situation kind of is what it is, you know, right. And you have to be able to walk sometimes from it, you know, right. and kind of reinvent.
Yeah, and it doesn't have to always be, you know, I think a lot of times we get to a point where, okay, we're taking pain. Maybe there's pain, and maybe it's degrees of pain. And that's when that's the indication that, hey, we've got to change. But I would assume great leadership and strategists aren't saying, well, no, we're going to take pain, because I don't think it has to be that. And I think about you, and I think about what you've done from your time at RIT with the Folding Factory and all the different things that you've done around that. You're not throwing that, this is a terrible, you know, baby out with the bathwater. You're still doing that. It's still your lifeblood. You're not just changing for the sake of change. You're actually adding to it. And right?
Yeah. And I can remember, you know, there's been different turning points throughout the, I guess I've been at this, I don't know, almost 20 years, but Fold Factory's been around since, I guess, when did we start? 2002 was when I think we started the company Fold Factory. Mm-hmm. But I can remember very specific turning points. I mean, I remember early on when I had done so much research on folding, I'd written books and I had, I remember I was kind of building momentum for the subject matter, because nobody had ever talked about folding. Nobody cared about folding. Nobody thought about folding. I was trying to, you know, prove to people that this was a valid topic and that it was interesting and it was creative. And I remember I was at Graph Expo and I was at the, it was one of the kind of breakout events at Graph Expo. This was years back, early on. And I remember they said that I was going to probably have about 50 people in my session. And I was talking about, you know, my research and folding and all the different families and things and how it all worked. And three people showed up. And, you know, one person in the front row, one person by the door so they can escape. You know how this goes, right? They're all like really spread far apart, you know, you're like, and then the person who feels sorry for you and stays, like, you can tell they're each different personalities. You know, the person who just wanted somewhere to go to get away from everybody, and then there was the person who wants to leave, and the person who feels sorry for you. So anyway, I had three people in this session, and I remember just being, it was mortifying, right? I kind of went, wow, and I knew at that exact moment, and I just remember it clear as day, and I remember thinking, I mean, I kind of got through my presentation and left with my tail between my legs, you know, and I knew that I could either keep kind of doing what I was doing, or I was going to have to change. Like, this was not working. People were not getting it. It wasn't that I knew that the content was valid. I knew the research was valid. You know, I knew that everything about it was right, and all the information I'd gotten from the industry that supported it was right, but I was going about it the wrong way. And so I knew that I could just give in and just either keep doing what I was doing or shut it down, you know, or I could reinvent. And I remember it was right on the edge of when people started to, you know, leverage video. It was, you know, this was, you know, 8-9 years ago. When people were starting to leverage video for content marketing. And I remember just saying, like, I have to get this out to more people. I have to prove that this is interesting. And that was really where, kind of out of a deep sleep, my idea of Fold of the Week came up. I mean, it just came out of desperation and kind of, you know, the need to reinvent and pressure and, you know, energy and everything, you know, creativity and energy and pressure and fear and everything kind of builds up into this crazy idea that comes out of a deep sleep, you know? And And that's how it kind of forced me to get into an entirely new medium, new wave of how I was going to, you know, get the word out. It's just interesting how you can kind of look back on your time in anything and kind of see those moments pretty clearly of when you changed gears or when you had to do, you know, something different.
You know, and it's funny. I think that's a, fantastic story, and because it's, I think there's so many people that they make their millions, let's say, and they write their book and they tell everybody about it, and they say, gosh, you know, I was really, really smart. You know, when a lot of us, I think, it fall more into the something. I like it to say, look, I got lucky, or, you know, I started, you know, we've done some stuff that, there was a time I'm going, you know, I can't, this isn't going to work. I can't just do, I just can't sell ads. And so, and so I had a bigger belief that, you know, you build a following and then the other stuff will come and you serve and other stuff will come. So, But it wasn't clear as day. Like, I'm absolutely positively going to do this. And because you clearly weren't, there wasn't a time when you were going, yes, I think I'm going to do all these folding videos. And that's kind of how I'm going to build this following. You know, it was almost that pain that drove you and get kind of got lucky. It's like, you know, they say the overnight success takes 10 years.
And it does. It absolutely does. And in my case, takes almost 20. You know, it's you just don't know. You know what I mean? And it is. It's that kind of pain point. It's true. You know, I've had people tell me about Fold of the Week. You know, they say, you know, we all wish we had thought of that first. You know what I mean? It was had this crazy idea with the shirts and this and that, and people are like, we wish we had thought of it. You know, and it just happened to be that I came upon that idea at the right time and happened to have kind of this magical little formula. And it came out of, you know, who knew it would be? You know, you sometimes with this stuff, you don't know what's going to be what, you know, resonates with people, you know. And so it was just a very honest, authentic, you know, effort. And I think that's part of what its appeal was and still is.
I think that's, look, your enthusiasm, and we've all seen this, people that somehow just seem to have an enthusiasm for what they do. And it is interesting because a lot of times it comes through as enthusiasm for an offering, a product, a service, but it's really not. It's more of an enthusiasm for the fact that you're competent and that you feel good about this and you want to share this, and you have a personality that allows you to share this. I got to tell you this story. This is an absolute true story. So my best friend, so I grew up in the paper industry, especially when you grow up with someone like Sappy, right? You know, at the time, Steve Warren, they educate you so amazing. Wonderfully. And I know they've been a supporter of yours as well. Yep. They've just always done it the right way, and it's all through education. So when they spit you out into the world, certainly back then, you're full of all this knowledge. And I would go around, I'd be at cocktail parties, right? I'd be at bars talking about you know, paper. And my buddy says to me, I swear to you, he says to me that at one point, he says, you know, Mark, if I had one day to live, I'd want to spend it with you talking about paper. And I said, well, why is that? And he said, because it would last forever. And so, I mean, it is... But they used to tease me about it, but there is something infectious about it. And I did love that. And I think that you know, you might take something that might seem to some like folding, really folding? And you have, it's not the folds. Sure, the folds are pretty cool and dynamic and people are interesting, but there is this persona that you've put around it. And that's deeper than the fold. You're not, I mean, I'm sure you're in love with the fold, but you're in love with kind of the connection. Is that accurate?
The process and the people. Like I see every week as a conversation with a group of friends. Like they, I feel like my audience knows me now. And I feel the people who watch because they really do like the show and like my information and me personally. And so I feel like each week I'm there to have a conversation and to, you know, inspire people, and it's fun, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so that part is really neat. And, you know, we have a just kind of rabid fan base, you know, the people who watch are just into it, you know?
Yeah, well, that's great. Well, you've drawn them into it.
It's fun.
I think it's excellent that you've drawn them into it. Well, let me ask you this. So, when you think about reinvention, you know, let's go back and talk about. All right, so tell me more about what you're doing now. Tell me, you went from RIT, you got into the Fold Factory, you started that. That's a great story in terms of how you get the message. But even today, you know, the last time you and I talked a little bit about this, we talked about how, you know, there are life cycles to things and things might start to plateau a little bit. And you're finding yourself having multiple kind of opportunities now in this day and age. And so maybe speak a little bit to that.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's pretty neat. I mean, it really has been an evolution. So, you know, yes, we started Fold Factory 2012. It was just basically a book. I published a 850-page, two-volume book about folding. And then we turned that into a piece of software that created dynamic templates. And that's still our template builder that we have today. We now offer it free on the site, but that's been our core. You know, we were a software company for a while. And then we became kind of an idea company. And, you know, that led to our launch about close to 2 years ago of kind of the manufacturing side. We became a folding factory, and we started producing creative folds and, you know, selling dye lines and samples and things. But what has happened is, you know, in addition to that, is this a real need for kind of the inspirational side. I do a lot of event work these days. I go out. I was actually, you know, I was just on the road. You know, I was just at Think Patented in Ohio. I mean, I've been all over the place. But I mean, I've been all over inspiring designers and, you know, and creative people and marketers to do interesting things with their direct mail and marketing, and, you know, getting into broader topics. And then Fold Factory as well. We kind of had an interesting discovery recently. You know, the fear, as I was telling you the other day, was, I mean, at some point, you know, pretty much the print industry knows where I am. Mm-hmm. You know, once people kind of figure out what you do and where you are, my fear was, you know, are people going to say, okay, been there, done that, seen your stuff. You know, well, like at some point, are people going to either suffer from Trish fatigue, or am I going to have to, you know, reinvent again? And you know, you want to always stay fresh. And so we did some research recently and started to look into, you know, what are we not seeing? You know, is there anything that we're not seeing? And we realized that it's just kind of a funny thing, and I can't believe this was kind of under my nose the whole time, but we have a Pinterest page, and we just, you know, we have one because it's just another platform. We thought, you know, everybody, okay, if you've got Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, you got to have Pinterest too if you do something visual, which we do. And we hadn't really paid much attention to it, posted a little bit to it here and there as we were going, posted a lot of the Fold of the Weeks over there because we could. And then we realized that we were getting, you know, 60,000 views per month and 140,000 impressions standing still on Pinterest, and that crafters, wow, and busy moms and party planners and stuff were posting our stuff. And we've always focused. Yeah, it's crazy. So we've always focused at Fold Factory on the B2B space, you know, just business to business. And we realized that there's an entire market. We started doing research and talking to busy moms and crafters, people who like craft and sell cards and do all sorts of stuff on Etsy and whatever. And they have a real need for creative formats in, you know, like cut paper, like colored paper on, you know, cardstocks and things like that. And so we're going to be launching Fold Factory Craft soon, which is an entire B2C craft division. And it's just crazy because I would go into my kids' classrooms. I have two kids, they're 9 and 10. And I would go into their classrooms and do little projects with the kids. You know, once a year I'd pick a day and I'd do a fun foldy. I'd take one of my Fold Factory formats and I'd turn it into a kid's craft. Mm-hmm. And I'd get them all laser cut and stuff. And I'd go in and I'd bring these kids these cool things and we'd make stuff. And the teacher would always go nuts. And, the moms who were the homeroom moms would always go, "What is this?" And I always would say, "Oh, you know, it's just this little thing. And I don't do this stuff, but it's just kind of fun and whatever." Mm-hmm. And I would just never took it that seriously, like the reaction that and the kids going nuts and everybody going nuts over it. And here it was under my nose.
Yeah.
And so I think sometimes, too, these kind of interesting pivot points or, you know, points of, you know, opportunity to reinvent yourself sometimes are right under your nose. And we just had to find it. We had to see it. And we had to do some research. You know, I certainly have learned not to kind of jump in head first without doing a lot of research these days. But it's been fascinating. And so now we're really focused on this kind of next iteration. We're keeping Fold Factory, but then we're launching Fold Factory Craft. And we're pretty excited about it because it's neat to – I love change. And not everybody does. I mean, I love change. I love a new challenge and doing new things. And to me, it's just another kind of proof, I guess, that the research and the, you know, that the work that I've built on for so many years has value, you know. To me,
sure.
I feel like, okay, you know, there are more people who need it. And it's a bigger group than I thought, you know. And,
well,
and so that's fun.
Yeah, and I think, you know, what's funny is I think the interesting takeaway from my perspective on that is that you can't necessarily reinvent yourself unless you are known by some people and unless you've put some stuff out into the world, and specifically, you know, to put content out into the world allows you to listen. You know, it's we have a world full of noise. We have a world full of people that put stuff out, but maybe they're not listening. If you're putting stuff out and then you're obviously looking at whether that vehicle is Pinterest or whether that vehicle is a podcast or a printed magazine, you know, whatever that publishing process is, you first have to have some people who say, you know, I like, that's interesting. And if you say, oh gosh, there's people who actually like this. And then you have the ability to listen. That's when you start to find those niche type opportunities. Or so you say, it was right under my nose, but I don't know. You have to give yourself a little more credit than that, because I think, you know, you built this following, you were able to put out compelling content, and then you were actually utilized some vehicles to listen. See, this is my whole push.
Yeah.
And it's my whole push with the printing industry. Is that, look, this is obviously a pretty blatant leading conversation. I think the analogy of what you're doing is not only are you doing great stuff with Folds and have always done great things with Folds and have a nice personality about yourself and that people are receptive to, you're also taking that community that you've built and you're starting to reinvent and see different opportunities. Well, the analogy is for the printing community, and that it's clear that you know, we're at the kind of the end of the life cycle. We have to reinvent as well. And I keep telling them, listen, the publishing process is in fact kind of the marketing process. You know, you put stuff out into the world, and you know, if the world tells you that they don't like it, then you'll know. But as you've done that,
right,
it's really interesting. So your following is probably allowed you to kind of to see that, don't you think?
Mm-hmm. Oh, it absolutely has. Because I don't know that I would have come upon it any other way. And it just gives you kind of, you know, it's just interesting. You have to. And here's the other thing I would say is that you have to look for the right insight in the data. So, you know, it's one thing to generate it. We were generating it. We just didn't see the insight in it. You know, like, you have to also be open to looking for insight within that data.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and we kind of went, wait a minute, you know, okay, what's going on with this Pinterest traffic? And what does it mean?
Right.
And who is it that's pinning it? and this is not our target audience currently. And yet there's this whole, you know, group that is interested in what we're doing, but they're kind of a silent group. And, you know, and so it was kind of also being open to looking for that, that insight. And, you know, and you know, sometimes we listen to only the stuff we want to hear.
Sure.
And, or see the stuff we only want to see.
Sure.
And, you know, we always thought, well, no, we're full factory and we just work with B2B and we do this kind of elite higher end, you know, of print and direct mail. And, you know, it was kind of, we just didn't ever see ourselves in that category and kind of went, wait a minute. Look at this. Like, think about it. Do the research. And we realized, wait a minute, you know, and this is kind of fun. You know, it's a completely different customer, completely, you know, definitely tangential as far as products go, but simple.
Simple. How do you, so you're, I mean, coming from RIT, so that's, and that's the thing, right? Your background is research, your background, right?
And
doing analysis. How, but with all these different vehicles, so tell me how, when you talk about research, what is that research? Because a lot of, it's intimidating. It's intimidating for our industry. And, you know, we've got small, medium, we, you know, we've got an industry, it is predominantly B2B. And they've traditionally used just salespeople to go out and promote their message. And that was their communication vehicle. That's obviously clearly changing. So now you talk about data and research and all this kind of stuff. And I've talked to countless printers, and when you get them alone, they'll say, it's really kind of intimidating. I mean, because you think of it like it's this big thing, but there are new tools out there. So when you do it, what does it look like?
Well, and interestingly, this time around, we're taking a very different approach. We're doing more hands-on types of research that is face-to-face with people. And we're just getting kind of fascinating feedback because we're using tangible, we're creating tangible products and things. And I'm physically going and meeting with people who actually use the products and saying, you know, like I located a lady who does crafting seminars and does the craft card making, and she does it as a rep and she does all this stuff. And I just sit down with her and we just talk about them. She's like, well, you know, the reason that I wouldn't use this is because, you know, this type of paper doesn't respond well to stamping, or, you know, well, okay, I would never know that. Like, we so many times, I think we know better than everybody else, or we think we know what people want, or we think we know what they're going to buy. And just because, and I've learned this the hard way through Fold Factory, just because something has 50,000 views and hundreds of likes does not mean people are going to buy it. Aspiration does not equal buying intent. And I think it's easy to be led by, oh, you know, everybody likes this and everybody says this is neat, so that means they're going to buy it, versus going in and having, you know, a lot of times we don't want to take the time and have those conversations and meet with people. But I am learning so much from, and it's stuff that I would never know, and would never, I mean, just, I'm learning so much from talking to the actual end user who is going to be using the product, who is going to be picking it, you know, and I'm just, you know, asking the right questions and having them make, you know, choose. And then I'm, you know, I'm not just meeting with one person, I'm meeting with, you know, multiples, but in different scenarios.
Sure.
Saying, you know, what would you do with this? Do you like it? Do you not like it? Is it the right weight? Is it the right size? You know, and well, here's why we use this size, and here's why we use that size, and this is the reason why we, you know, do this. And I'm learning so much. So I think a lot of times research doesn't have to be complicated. I think we think of research and technology today and everything's so high tech and over our heads, and sometimes it is. I like the technology for the stats. I think when you've got a presence out there and when you're doing enough, you know, when you can actually generate some real stats on traffic and, you know, where things are coming from and what people are doing with them and how many, you know, all of your, you know, everything from your volume to your likes and your views and your this and your that and who's doing it and what. I think that stuff's interesting. But I think what's really interesting is the stuff that a lot of times we don't want to do, which is sitting down with people, having a face-to-face conversation. So much easier to send an email, to send a survey, to, you know, and sometimes people will, you know, in a survey tell you what they think you want to hear, you know? Mm-hmm. You really have to kind of get to the root of who it is that's going to use the product or who's actually having, you know, the experience with the product and, you know, get deeper into it. And that, for me, has been the best research.
Yeah, I, oh, man, you know, I get, you know, that gets me, it gets me juiced because I really feel the same way. And we've got a world that is, like I said, it's very noisy. They've mm-hmm. you know, we talk about big data and all this stuff. And, but the consumer is just so smart now that
yep.
I know not to click here, or I know not, you know, you're not exactly. building this warm, friendly relationship with me through the social channels / email stats, that kind of stuff. At some point, yep. there has to be more of a connection. And I'm just saying, I'm with you, that you need to use some of the stats maybe directionally. Certainly yeah. through segmentation, you can start to do some stuff that way. But yep. eventually, if you don't have that knowledge, here's another. This is, you know, dating myself, but I, you know, in the early 90s, Jurassic Park, the first movie, came out, and I went to it. I lived in San Francisco. I remember watching the movie. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is the greatest thing ever. You know, today my kids look at it and go, Dad, that's so fake. That's so fake. And so, but in that movie, Jeff Goldblum, he was the crazy guy, and he was questioning the old guy who started this whole Jurassic Park thing. And he says to him, he says, listen, it's not that you've done this that's wrong, right? It's not that mm-hmm. it's not that you've created these animals. It's that you used no discipline in getting to this point. It's that you took yep. what other people's did before you, and they spliced in frog DNA or whatever, and then you added to it. And so, and in a lot of ways, you, from a business standpoint, whether we're talking about reinventing ourselves, whether we're launching a new product or whatever, you know, and that's the world we live in, right? We can Google anything, and we don't really have to delve into it and take the experience factor and understand it for ourselves. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times we live in this world where they just want to slap something, some technology on it and scale it. Like, I want to scale intimacy, right? And it doesn't, right. doesn't right. work that way. You've got to get down and dirty and sit down. And that's the beauty of what you were talking about, is that you got to sit down with people to that, and so you have some insight into them.
It's right.
What, you know, data
and,
doesn't.
And I think a lot of times, yeah, and I think a lot of times we think, oh, well, if we get a big survey taken by a big group, you know, we think that kind of volume trumps, you know, right. You know, the everything else. And it's not always this big, gigantic consensus and volume and, you know, technology on a, you know, on a chart or something. And I believe in data-informed decisions, not data-driven. And so I think, you know, the data is great as a support structure, but I think there's got to be some proof in, you know, that kind of face-to-face, you know, interaction and really talking with the people that are going to use and buy the products. And believe me, I've learned, mm-hmm. Because I certainly have made my mistakes with Fold Factory, where I thought that our most popular formats, things that everybody loved and couldn't get enough of and wanted samples of, that they were going to buy them. And what it is people loved the idea of these formats, but they didn't have a use for them.
Right.
And so they weren't buying them. They were just admiring them. And there's a difference. There's a huge difference. So, yeah. You know, we're now working, we're simplifying and we're creating things that, you know, that are desirable for the masses, and kind of, okay, you know, what would be fun and useful and, you know, in colors that people like and whatever, you know, it's just a totally different thing. You know, we're really approaching it very differently this time around. And I think we're going to have you know, a much better result from it, because we're not kind of making educated guesses. We're actually getting in there and rolling up our sleeves and working with and beta testing, you know, this stuff with groups and with, you know, and with actual, you know, people who use the product. And we're solving, you know, real tangible problems.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's been fun. It's actually been fun to get to kind of get in there.
Sure.
That way.
Sure. You're right. Change is, I'll never forget when I worked for an organization and I had probably a steady paycheck but boy, I was, we weren't necessarily doing, my job was more about pleasing the boss, so to speak. And I'll never forget the stress that comes with that. And then there's a lot of people out there that have that. And the stress of starting your own business and going off and doing something and you know, when you're sleeping with one eye open at night, that stress is another thing. But gosh, I'll tell you the difference. There's nothing, they don't compare. The other one hurts, you know, where you don't really have control and it's not really on the merits of who you are. And at the bare minimum, you know, look, I'm banking on myself. And so when you talk about change and you get into that, you're banking on you and your connections, and that's why it's fun. Let me ask you a question, because I hate the fact that I could probably talk your ear off the whole time and listen to you talk. I mean, but time flies by. But let me.
This has been really fun. Yeah.
I really enjoy it. I mean, maybe we'll do it again, and certainly we need to spend some time beyond this. So you're doing more speaking. And you're having a ball with that. And so
I am.
Give me, without giving out, you know, all the good stuff, because we will obviously want people to hire you to come in and speak. But give me a snippet of your message and, you know, some of the things that that are resonating with the crowd these days.
Sure. Well, so I have a whole new content track right now. It's just been fascinating to me. I've been studying. It's called The Edge, and it's all about how you can get an edge in sales and business through taking the emotion out of the process and using actually moves that are inspired by the game of blackjack. So it's kind of wild and crazy, but I've been studying companies who are doing pretty amazing things, and they're doing it, by really taking the emotion out. A lot of us, when we're making decisions, we do it kind of emotionally.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the marketing advice of the day is all about building relationships, and, you know, give. And the thing about relationships is they're unpredictable and they can be unbalanced. And, you know, so I started looking around, because there were certainly businesses out there that were doing really, really well, and yet they didn't have, you know, a sexy product to sell. They didn't have aggressive social media that was huge. It's like, well, how are they, you know, in today's content marketing, relationship marketing scenario, how are they doing so well? And, you know, I started interviewing companies and realizing that there's a real process behind it, and that there are some really interesting strategies that involve keeping score in many different ways, not just lead scoring, but like keeping score, whether it's through transparency of your data with your customers, whether it's, you know, forms of lead scoring. There can be lots of different ways to do it. There was a company that does a leaderboard a process, and they're scorekeeping within an industry and doing some really neat things. And it's kind of, how do you, you know, use these different techniques to get an edge? And what I like about it is, you know, you don't have to be, you can be anything. You can be B2B, B2C, you know, anybody can do it. And that's what I like about it. The hard thing with content marketing is you kind of have to be exceptional to get noticed, right?
I mean, that's kind of
what it is these days. And what I like is this idea that, yeah, you know, you can still, certainly you need your content marketing, you need all these other things that support it, but there's an underlying process that has nothing to do with creativity. It has everything to do with having, you know, a just a, you know, a just finite focus on what it is you're doing, a process that you're trusting and following. And it's that relentless pursuit that is the difference in the, you know, it's that willingness to step back and figure out a plan and to track it and to manage it and to look at that process and to follow it. And that's what so many times it's hard to have, you know, that level of, I guess, you know, we get distracted and we get off track and we lose focus and we, you know, it's very hard to kind of stick to that level of discipline in doing something. But that's the secret. The secret is scorekeeping and discipline and, you know, and constant feedback and taking that feedback and changing and tweaking as you go. Right. And keeping that going and always moving. And so it's been fascinating. So I was just in Toronto to give that speech the other day. And, you know, it's just been really resonating with audiences because it is. It's not aspirational and it's not unachievable and it's not creative. It's just it's discipline and focus and strategy and scorekeeping. And so that's been a lot of fun. And of course I do my events on folding and direct mail and, you know, all things print, which is really fun. So,
well, I mean, that sounds like a nice little marriage of content because, I mean, you've got some tactical stuff and creative stuff there. And I, going back to that, certainly process is huge. And I look at our industry or the printing industry and I think to myself, you know, there's so many processes within the manufacturing process that it'll blow your mind. And yet when we go back to the marketing side, strategy side, the sales side, they tend to go, hey, just go out there and do your thing. And, you know, they send the salespeople out there and, you know, they're not using a process to gather the data and, a great analogy is, it's funny, obviously, you know, everybody knows my kids play hockey and I squeeze it into every conversation, apparently I have, but there was a gentleman and I were talking about this and it was another hockey dad and the dad said something like, well, listen, I just want the kids to develop. I want them in a program, you know, and on a team to develop. And I said, I just want to win. And I said, and it's almost in this day and age, sounds like blasphemy. And yet, you know, I know that if you make my goal, if you make the goal to develop the kids, that they're not going to develop because you can't measure. I don't really understand that unless you're going to do like baseline measurement. Look, I want to win. And so if they win as a collective team, they're all going to get better. And if, you know, little Johnny is at the bottom of the barrel and doesn't make the team or is the last one on the team, guess what? He's now been given the motivation and the drive to figure out how to get better. And then they have to find those processes themselves. And so... So I like that.
And that's life, right? And that's careers. And it's like you want them to have that drive to win. If they just have a drive to develop, then where's the motivation? It's the same in business, right? It's like if our drive is just to tread water or just to cover our costs, then what's the point, right? And it's a great analogy. Cause that is, it's like, no, you have to really want to win.
So I love that, keeping score. I mean, that is a good edit. Well, I will I'll have to look forward to hearing you and I don't know, maybe we'll have to find a way to do something together, because, you know, I've got a lot of clients out there I think that would Love to hear that. And so you and I need to continue the conversation. So, all right. So I
Sounds
just,
great.
I can't thank you enough. But before I let you go, why don't you do a little promo? Where can they find you? Where can everybody go to find you?
Oh, excellent. Thank you so much. Well, sure. Yes, please. I'd love to be in touch with everyone. Of course, I'm on LinkedIn under Trish Witkowski. I am on Twitter at Trish Witkowski and at Folding Fanatic. I have two Twitter accounts for that. And then I'm Fold Factory on Facebook, Instagram, and Pinterest, just under Fold Factory. And then, of course, foldfactory.com is where we have, guidelines and templates and our template builder you can use for free if you join Fold Club, which takes 2 seconds and it's totally free, and you get on our Fold of the Week email blast. And then you can also subscribe to our YouTube channel otherwise if you'd rather do it that way. And again, that's just Fold Factory on YouTube. And then please watch for Fold Factory Craft coming soon as well. And gosh, yeah. And then speaking is Monumental Shift. And of course, you can contact me directly too. I do events for printers through Event in a Box. So a whole bunch of different things, I guess.
Yeah. So
Thank
basically,
you. I appreciate
everywhere,
that.
everywhere. That's
Yeah.
awesome.
You
Well,
cannot escape me, so just connect with me.
that's right. I love it. Well, Trish, this has been great and been a long time coming. I'm really, really glad we've done this. And I'll tell you what, I'll reach out and then we'll find out where our paths are going to cross, and we'll go get a cup of coffee.
Sounds awesome. Thanks so much. This was a blast.
All right, Trish, I appreciate it.
Okay,
Take
take
care.
care.
See ya. Bye.
Okay, thanks. Bye.
Well, guys, I hope you enjoyed this episode of Brushstrokes, a podcast powered by Canvas Magazine. A reminder that this episode was brought to you by Sappi Paper, a leading global provider of sustainable wood fiber products and solutions. To find out more about Sappi's Printer of the Year, go to www.sappi.com. My thanks to Trish Witkowski. I think that you will all agree that enthusiasm can't be taught. And I could have probably talked to Trish all day long. She's definitely got a wonderful mindset and is truly, truly passionate about what she's doing. I love the fact that she has continually tried to reinvent herself and continues to reach out in the most organic way. She is not someone who is just leaving it up to data. She's going out, she's talking to people, she's finding out opportunities by talking to people, and she engages on that level. So I encourage you all to check her out. She is a wonderful ambassador to our industry. So my thanks to her again, and my thanks to all of you for listening to Brushstrokes. And until next time, make sure that you are being the buffalo, and I look forward to you listening to our next episode of Brushstrokes. Take care.